Chapter 1. Meeting Dupin. The mental abilities we think of as the analytical are, in themselves, difficult to analyze. We know them only by their effects. We know that problem solving is an enjoyable activity to those who have strong analytical skills. It is like the strong man who takes pride in his physical ability and delights in using his muscles. The analyst, too, enjoys bringing his analytical talent into play. He enjoys puzzles, problems, and codes. He shows his solutions to each with such insight that he almost seems to have second sight. But in truth, his results come from a combination of method and intuition. The reasoning part of the mind is much stimulated by studying mathematics. The highest branch of mathematics is considered to be analysis. Yet to calculate is not in itself to analyze. A chess player, for example, does one but not the other. I'm writing this not as an argument for or against the game of chess. I'm writing this as an introduction to a strange story. In this story, I will show that the mode of thought used in checkers can be more useful than that of chess. Chess is considered to be more intellectual than checkers. Indeed, it is more complex. The different pieces have different moves available to them, and they have different values. Players must pay close attention to keep many possibilities in their minds. It is easy to lose track and make an error that costs them the game. In checkers, on the other hand, there are fewer possibilities. Thus, it is not so important to pay attention to the game. One does not have to keep track of as many possibilities. Instead, the stronger player is the one with better insight. The story I wish to tell begins with a meeting. I spent the spring and part of the summer in Paris. There I became friends with a young gentleman called Dupin. He was from a well-off family, but a run of unfortunate events led to his loss of fortune. His spirit was broken, and he had no desire to lift himself out of poverty. He had enough of his family's money left to survive on. The only luxury he allowed himself was books, and this was how I met him. Our first meeting was at a bookstore. We were both looking for the same rare book. It was not at this store, and as we both continued searching, we ran into each other again and again. I became very interested in his family history, which he was open to sharing, and the extent of his reading was impressive. But more than anything, his imagination inspired me. I expected we would develop a valued friendship, and I told him so. We decided to share a residence while I was in the city. Since I had enough money, I would pay rent for the both of us. We were able to find a place that suited us. It was an old, run-down house that no one had lived in for some time. We did not ask why it had been abandoned. If people had known about our daily habits, they would have thought we were mad. We kept to ourselves. I did not tell any of my former friends where I was living, and we admitted no visitors. It was just the two of us. My friend was a night owl, and I became a fan of darkness with him. Of course, it could not always be night, but when the sun rose, we would close the shutters. Then we'd light a few candles and read, write, or chat until the sun set. When darkness finally arrived, we would go out arm in arm. We'd chat and walk the streets until late at night. We loved the wild lights and shadows of the city at night. At such times, Dupin showed me his peculiar analytic ability. I could not help but admire the way he could solve problems, and he enjoyed doing it. He said that most men give clues as to what is going on in their minds, and he proved that I was not different from most men. We were walking one night down a long, dirty street. 15 minutes passed, during which neither of us spoke a word. All at once, Dupin said, "He is a very little fellow, that's true. He would be more suited to the variety theater." "There can be no doubt of that," I replied without thinking. But then I realized how he had seemed to read my thoughts. "Dupin," I said, "I don't understand. How did you know I was thinking of..." Here I paused to see if he knew who I was thinking about. "Of Chantilly," he said. Why are you surprised? You were thinking to yourself that his small size made him unsuited to tragedy. This was precisely what I was thinking. Chantilly was a former cobbler who decided to try acting. He was made fun of for his role as a character named Xerxes. Tell me, for heaven's sake, I cried, the method, if there is a method, you were using to read my mind. It was the fruit seller, replied my friend, who brought you to the conclusion that the repairer of shoes was not tall enough to play Xerxes. The fruit seller? You astonish me. I don't know any fruit sellers. The man in the street who brushed up against you 15 minutes ago. I now remembered that, in fact, a fruit seller had nearly knocked me over by accident. He was carrying a large basket of apples on his head, but I could not possibly understand what this had to do with Chantilly. Dupin was not one to trick people. I will explain, he said. And so that you will understand all clearly, we will retrace the course of your thoughts. We'll start from the moment I spoke to you until your encounter with the fruit seller. Your train of thought ran as follows. Chantilly, Orion, Dr. Nichols, Epicurus, Stereotomy, the Street Stones, and the Fruit Seller. Most people have at some time amused themselves in retracing the steps by which they arrived at a certain conclusion. It is an interesting activity and can be very surprising. Even when you look at the starting point and ending point of your own train of thought, the results are often astonishing. But when someone else retraces your private thoughts, it is truly amazing. We had been talking of horses, he continued, if I remember correctly, just before leaving the last street. This was the last subject we discussed. As we entered this street, a fruit seller with a large basket upon his head caused you to step on a pile of paving stones. They were collected at a spot where the street is being repaired. You stepped on a loose stone, slipped, and slightly hurt your ankle. You seemed annoyed and muttered a few words, turned to look at the pile, and then proceeded in silence. You kept your eyes upon the ground. You kept glancing, with an unhappy look on your face, at the cracks and holes in the pavement, so I could tell that you were still thinking of the stones. When we reached the little alley called Lamartine, which has been paved with a pleasing pattern of these blocks, you cheered up. I noticed your lips move and thought that you muttered the word stereotomy, which is the term for the technique used in cutting these paving stones. I knew that you could not say to yourself stereotomy without being brought to think of atoms, and once you were thinking of atoms, you would surely think of Epicurus. I remembered that we had talked about Epicurus recently. I had mentioned to you that he had some ideas about how the solar system was formed. I knew that thinking about that would make you look up at the sky at Orion, and you did. I was assured that I had correctly followed your steps. Now, there was a piece in yesterday's paper, a satirical piece. It poked fun at Chantilly and at the boots he wore to appear taller. The writer quoted a Latin phrase which I had mentioned to you the other day. I had told you that this phrase was in reference to Orion. It was clear, therefore, that you had not failed to combine the two ideas of Orion and Chantilly. That you did combine them, I saw by the character of the smile which passed over your lips. You thought of the poor cobbler's embarrassment. Thus far, you had been stooping as you walked, but now I saw you stand up straight. I was then sure that you reflected upon Chantilly's size. At this point, I interrupted your thoughts to let you know I agreed. He was a very little fellow, that Chantilly. He would do better at the Variety Theater.